You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, March the 13th. And former Piston Grant Long joins us today along with another guest host. But this is your boy Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and the Associated Press, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Today, we are going to have our fill-in host Joe Brown detailing tonight's game against the Miami Heat. Looking forward to what Joe has to say. And a little bit later on, I'm going to be joined by Grant Long, a former member of the Detroit Pistons, and also a former member, a founding member of the Miami Heat as well. Some interesting stories from him. Love talking to Grant. Excited to share this interview with you guys as well. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Really appreciate you guys doing that. But now, here's Joe Brown talking about tonight's game against the Miami Heat.
Yo, what's up, everybody? This is Doc Joe Brown giving the good preview of the Pistons visiting the Miami Heat. On 3-1-3 day, it's Detroit's day, so we got to get the victory after that shellacking Brooklyn put on our Monday night. I'm talking about it was bad. After the second quarter, you could have shut it down. It was just terrible. It was one of those things where can we just throw a towel on the court, save those legs? They won. They didn't just capture the sixth seed. They took it from us. They were like, yo, this is ours. We're the better team tonight. I'm not going to say they're the better team overall. So hopefully we can bounce back tonight against the Miami Heat. First of all, I never like teams with the non-countable nouns as their mascot, like Oklahoma City Thunder. I always want to say like a plural is in town, like the Lakers, the Bulls, and now we have the, I can't say the Heats are in town, but it just always makes it feel odd. It will be D. Wade's last game against the Detroit Pistons, unless somehow we meet in the playoffs. So last regular season game. And shout out to Udonis Haslem. Udonis, you won't see a Udonis Haslem jersey at a game. I don't think he has a cult-like following online. But it's his last season. It's his last game, too. And this is a tough league to be in. I'm not saying he's Hall of Fame status or anything like that. But any time that you can just persevere in this league and stay on a team that long, and he had a lot of opportunities to go like other places, but he stayed, stuck with a team. So just hats off to him. Let's not forget him in this. Looking at their depth chart, he's third in his position. So he's riding the pine. He's warming the bench, but the point is he's there. It's tough to get in this league and even ride the bench. So the key things to remember in this game is Miami is a certified 8 seed right now, right? So the back end of the Eastern Conference is Brooklyn. Of course, they're in 6. They deserve it after that win on Monday night. The Pistons are in 7th. Shout out to them. Month of February and March been good to them. And then Miami. Those are the only 3 teams right now that truly control their own destiny. So the more they win, the more they secure their playoff spots. The Pistons need to win 16 games if they want to have the 6th spot. They need to win 13 games if they want to have the 7th spot. And then their magic number for making the playoffs is 12. Miami's magic number is 14 to make the playoffs. So the big 3, the new big 3 down in South Beach is Josh Richardson, Hassan Whiteside, and Justice Winslow. I know, Justin Winslow is a sore spot for many Pistons fans because we could have had him. He went after we drafted Stanley Johnson in the draft. Justice went and also Devin Booker went. But remember, this is not, don't get your panties up in a bunch. This is not like a Sam Bowie, Michael Jordan situation. This is a situation, we're talking about the mid-latter part of the first round. So, like, Devin Booker went 13th. So don't just be mad at the Pistons. Be mad at everyone. All these teams have full-time employees and scouts and things like that that review these players. So a lot of people were wrong. And if you remember that time within just the Pistons, just draft discussions, I don't know if it was on a podcast. I don't know if it was on a video where he actually said it. But Justice Winslow, the rumors were he made it blatant that he did not want to play for the Pistons. So you don't want to get a player in here that admits like, hey, I don't want to be here. So he's leading them in assists per game. So he's probably the facilitator. Probably has the ball a lot and probably make things go. He's also leading them in steals per game. Hassan Whiteside is leading them in blocks per game and rebounds per game. He's very similar to, I don't want to say anything disrespectful, but I think Hassan Whiteside is very similar to an Andre Drummond. I don't want to call him watered down because I don't know who's listening to this, but I would just say that Andre Drummond's ceiling is just slightly higher than his, with all due respect. Josh Richardson, 17 points a game, and he's a highlight too. That's what I like about Josh Richardson. Not only does he lead his team in points, but he'll give you a nice little dunk every now and then, and that's what the Pistons are missing. A couple weeks ago, Luke Kennard had a steal down in San Antonio. I just want to say, do something crazy. Throw it off the backboard. Let's make SportsCenter. Let's get some Pistons highlights at the front end of NBA game time and SportsCenter of all these things. But he's leading them in points. Note this. Miami is not leading top five statistical categories as team statistical categories in any, they're not top five in any major statistical category in the league, far as teams are, and none of their players are. So that's why I say they're like a certified 8 seed, right? They're just all right in everything. They're just better than the bad teams. I want to take some time to focus on D-Wade. When you think about it, him and Udonis Haslem, they're the only links between those historic battles, 05, 04, 06, between like Chauncey and Rip and things like that. So I know there's things, you know, let's not have those, you know, just people are making comments like he's the greatest two-guard ever. He's surefire Hall of Famer. I think one of the things with the fans that make it difficult for him to like resonate, and he has this cult-like following, people are diehard Dwayne Wade fans, is just his overall marketing through the years. I know he came out, he was behind Melo, he was behind Darko. Okay, we're going to get over that real quick. He was behind LeBron. And then Melo and LeBron got these really big shoe contracts and everything. And it was like Melo was the face of Jordan Brand. And they were doing this cool thing with Jordan 10.5 and 5.5 and all of these other things, giving Melo all these sweet shoes. LeBron, of course, we don't even want to get into that. He's basically Mr. Nike now. He got the lifetime contract. I think his son is signed to him. And then D-Wade always had this weird thing. Like, he was with Converse, and then they stopped doing basketball shoes. And then he went to Jordan Brand, which was cool. But, you know, Melo was Mr. Jordan Brand by then. And then Chris Paul was on there and stuff like that. And then he left Jordan Brand with all due respect because he was like, I want my own shoe. I don't want to be wearing anybody else's shoe. And then he kind of went to this Li Ning brand to kind of make a face of it. And it's difficult because when people wear sneakers, they want to take that. That's them like taking you home with them, essentially. Like, hey, I'm a big fan and he's a part of him is in my closet. I know that sounds weird, but so with this Li Ning thing, it's hard to get his shoes. They're like an overseas company. Everything is e-commerce. So you got to think about that when you're telling a story from a marketing standpoint to the fan. And then he has some weird things tied up in there. Like he did the endorsement for the Stick'Em on the shoes, which never really worked out. And then he was endorsing the towel. So you want to respect it. He tried to come at it from a different angle, but everything had a real infomercial feel to it. Some other fun facts I just want to throw in here. Coach Spo, shout out to Coach Spo. I know he went through a lot of ridicule early because he had those big three on there, Wade and LeBron and things like that. Just know he's the first ever Asian-American head coach in any of the four major leagues. So that's baseball, hockey, anything of that. In a Detroit tie, his grandfather is Watson Spoelstra, who worked for the Tigers from 1945 to 1973. Shout out to NBA Insider. I found that out on one of their videos. So that's all I got. I'm running out of time. Again, this is Doc Joe Brown, real name, no gimmicks. That's RNNG. You can find me on Twitter under that same name. I tweet under, like, I do a bunch of retweets of just MMA, Detroit Pistons, wrestling stuff. And then my family has their own church, so I always keep it really clean. Hit me up if you want to hoop. I'm a season ticket holder. I'm sitting at the bootleg club seats. That's the drink rail at Portal 23. Come through. Next time Matt has me on, I'm going to do a giveaway. So I will see everyone at the watch party at Motor City this Wednesday. I'm going to have on that NBA Finals throwback Pistons hat. All right, I'll holler at you later. Bye.
Well, thanks to Joe for that. Really appreciate the help of all the guest hosts this week as I'm on vacation. But up next, we're going to talk to Grant Long, the Fox Sports Detroit analyst, also former Piston and former original member of the Miami Heat. That'll be up next here on the show.
Yes, sir!
Well, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year. In my family, we proudly ran 8 years of illegal betting pools at Kimball High School growing up. But whether you like filling out a bracket in my pool, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun this year. Will Zion and his teammates cement their Duke legacy with a title? Can the Virginia Cavaliers get past their loss to a 16 seed last year? And can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? And more locally, how about the Spartans and the Wolverines? Who goes forward and makes the longer run this year? If you know the answers, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. Yeah, that's right, I'm looking at you. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business, and the best part is they pay out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash. Deposit with MyBookie today with promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. 50% sign-up bonus. Just use promo code LOCKEDONNBA. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. All right, and now we're being joined by Grant Long, a 15-year NBA veteran, and all the old NBA guys say that the thing they want to become in the league is a veteran, and you certainly did that throughout your time in the league from Romulus, Eastern Michigan, and like I said, 15 years all across the league, including 2 years with the Pistons. You now see him on Fox Sports Detroit as an analyst for the team. So, Grant, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Man, it feels good to be on with you. Thanks for having
sure.
me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking, we're pre-taping this a few days before, but tonight's game, as folks listen to this, in Miami against the Heat. Now, Grant, you obviously know a lot about this organization, and you were an original member of the Miami Heat. What's it like to start your career in a team that's starting its life as a franchise, and what was that experience like to start your career like that?
Yeah, it was the best of both worlds, and I'll give you the best part first, because it's a new team. It's in a new city. What better place could be there could be except rather than Miami. Miami, Florida. I mean, great weather all year round, and they're all of a sudden getting a basketball team. Move over Miami Dolphins. Here comes the Miami Heat, an NBA franchise. So that from that aspect, it was great because everything was new, and we actually put the Miami Dolphins on the back burner. They were the big cheese until we got there, and then the newness of the Miami Heat took over and everybody was on board with that. Every celebrity that you could imagine was at the games every night. You know, opening night was great. Everybody wore tuxedos. There was a big to do, red carpet and everything like that. And we were the celebrities. It was absolutely awesome for a first time NBA player like myself to be on board with that, to, you know, lay down the foundation of what they have now after, you know, a few championships under their belt. I look back and I say, you know, hey, I was a part of it. I didn't win the championship, but I was a part of one of the founding members of this organization that allowed them to continue to move forward and upward to have the success that they're having now. I mean, even add to that, Pat Riley is one of those guys who actually understands it's all about where you came from. He's got the names of every former player that ever played for the team in a room that guys come in and they can acknowledge the guys that were there before them. And I felt proud to have my name in that room, obviously. So that's the good of it. Now the bad of it is when you go to an expansion team and everybody takes turns kind of whooping your butt throughout the season, as we lost our first 17 games in a row in my inaugural season. So
oh
that
my
was,
gosh, first 17 games of the franchise? I don't remember that. That's not a great start.
17 games. We were the laughing stock of the NBA. I can remember it very vividly that David Letterman was actually, we were on his top 10 during that time. And one of the questions was, will the Heat win again? Will the Heat win tonight? And we made the top 10 a few times during that 17-game losing streak. It was actually, that was, I guess, a good part about it. But when you go through a 17-game losing streak, man, you feel and you get to know your teammates and you understand what the NBA is all about and how difficult it is to win basketball games.
Yeah, like you said, but it became a championship organization pretty much in short order, you know, given comparatively to what you would think a team of, you know, just put together. You get the Ronnie Cicleys of the world and yourself that kind of helped lay the foundation for that team. But now, speaking of laying the foundation, let's go way back. Let's go. You're from Romulus High School, and you had a great high school career, obviously, before going to Eastern Michigan. Now, did you overlap a couple years with Terry Mills at Romulus as well?
My junior year was Terry's freshman year. And no, I'm sorry. My senior year was Terry's freshman year.
Okay. And you guys are cousins. Is that correct?
That's right. We're cousins. And actually, the whole time we were in high school, we were next door neighbors.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so
it was awesome. We rode through the games together. We talked basketball. It was an awesome experience. And Terry broke his arm maybe two games into the season, so he didn't play. And that was detrimental to us. And he was coming into his own. He was an outstanding player from, you know, his freshman year on. But he broke his arm, so he was limited to what he could do, obviously. So he sat out that year, and then they came back. I think it was a year after I left, 2 years after I left, and won the state championship, and he went to Mr. Basketball.
Yeah, storied career for him and going on to the University of Michigan and then winning a national championship in Ann Arbor. But meanwhile, while he's winning the state championship, you're having a lot of great success in Ypsilanti with Eastern Michigan, becoming your senior year the MAC Player of the Year as well, eventually getting the jersey up in the rafters. And you guys, and again, this is a little, you know, not to make you feel bad, but this is a little bit before my time, because I remember the next era of Eastern Michigan Eagles, that, you know, the Earl Boykins, the Brian Tolbert, the Teron Wilson Dial, those guys,
right,
making a nice little fun, but nice little run. But you were playing for Coach Ben Braun, who went on to Cal after the success of that group. But you guys kind of went to the tournament yourself during one of your senior year, and kind of laid the foundation for what that group would become later on as well.
Absolutely. And you mentioned laying the foundation. I felt like going to the Miami Heat, that was my second time doing that. The first time was obviously at Eastern Michigan. They had never won the MAC title until my senior year, and that group that we had there, Coach Braun. So that was the first time ever doing that. But we went through a tough stretch my freshman year. I got to play a little bit more in my sophomore year. But then the coach that recruited me, Jim Boyce, he gets fired and Coach Braun takes over. So, you know, we went through a transition with the new philosophy and a new coach. Everything's different. Yet we were able, and some guys transferred, and we brought in some new guys. So we had to go through a big-time change and still try to keep it moving forward, which we were able to do. We continued to get better under Coach Braun and eventually winning the MAC championship and getting our first NCAA tournament berth in the school's history. So we felt good about that. We still feel very good about that. As a matter of fact, we had an alumni reunion a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of the guys showed up, and we talked about that inaugural game. We got our tails kicked by Pittsburgh. They had Charles Smith and Demetrius Gore and all those guys at that time. But it was a great experience. The first time, as a matter of fact, it was the 50th anniversary of the NCAA tournament. And we all got watches, and I think that was a key thing. To be able to go on the 50th anniversary and to be able to receive those watches, it's something that we'll never forget, we'll always cherish. And then have our MAC championship rings. Those are, you know, things that we talk about, we continue to talk about. We always talk about being champions. No, it wasn't an NCAA champion, but we were MAC champions, and we celebrated that.
Yeah, I think maybe to keep going on this laying the foundation path, I think probably some of those teams that got into the tournament and played those real tough teams maybe led to a better Mid-American Conference as a whole down the line, because you saw the years later, the team started making some runs. Kent State with Antonio Gates goes to the Elite Eight and all that stuff. When I come into college, it became on the football field even more so. Every week, Marshall or someone was beating some of these Big Ten top teams, and now the basketball teams were making some nice runs as well. But, Grant, as we kind of move forward here in your career, you ended up in Atlanta before coming over to Detroit, and that was at the time when, you know, Grant Hill would go up against Steve Smith in some of these playoff battles a couple of years in a row, or maybe 3 out of 4 years there during the Grant Hill era. Were you on both sides of some of those playoff series? Is that how that went down for you?
You know what? Yeah, I was, and I'll even take you back a little bit further than that, back to Miami. And I was the only guy in the inaugural year from Michigan. By the time it was all said and done, there was Willie Burton, Glenn Rice, Steve Smith, all from Michigan.
Right.
And I had a relationship with those guys prior to them coming to Miami. So it was great to be, you know, so far away from home, but yet surrounded by some familiar faces who were actually doing it. These guys were playing. These were outstanding players. You know, Glenn Rice went on to have a great NBA season, NBA All-Star, MVP, and all that champion. Steve Smith, an Olympic star. Willie Burton also played very well throughout his career. So it was great to have those familiar faces in Miami with me and then to see those guys go on to do great things even when they left the Miami Heat. So that was outstanding. But then Steve and I got traded from Miami to Atlanta. That was the first time that Steve and I were ever traded. Obviously, we traded a few more times, but that was the first time. That one always stings the most, but we were able to get over it. Atlanta was a pretty decent town, good team at the time. We played some of our best basketball with Atlanta, and that was like a coming out party for us. And I can look back and say that was I literally had my best year statistically when I played for the Atlanta Hawks. So that was an outstanding time for me, as well as being there with Steve Smith, who currently still lives in Atlanta. I don't, but Steve still lives there. Never moved once he got traded there. So we get we're playing some pretty good basketball. We're going back and forth with Detroit, and as you mentioned, they've got Joe Dumars and Grant Hill. I don't think Stackhouse is on the team at that point, but they've got a pretty solid team. And they beat us the first couple of years. And we beat them maybe once. During the summer, I'm on a cruise ship with my family, and I look across the ticker, and the people come running to me and say, "Hey, man, you've been traded." What do you mean I've been traded?
The cruise ship.
I'm literally on the cruise ship, and it's coming. We run down to the casino, and we're looking on the ticker, and it says, "Grant Long, Stacey Augmon traded."
That's hilarious.
For Dikembe Mutombo. So they signed Dikembe in Atlanta. Stacey Augmon and myself get traded to Detroit, where I'm paired with Grant Hill, Joe Dumars, Terry Mills, my cousin, for the first time. We're playing together. So that was a bittersweet thing. Didn't want to leave Atlanta. I didn't want to be traded, obviously. But to be traded to Detroit, my hometown Pistons, and be able to be reunited with my cousin Terry, and then have Grant Hill and play with the great Joe Dumars. I mean, I couldn't ask for much, much more than that. And we had a pretty good team once again there. And we go back and forth with Atlanta playing in the playoffs, and we beat them. It was outstanding to do that, you know. So to be in Detroit and to win and to play with the caliber of players that I played with is always a sweet thing to be.
And your former teammate Grant Hill goes into the Hall of Fame this past summer. I got to believe, looking at your career, that he's probably the best player that you've ever played with. Is that right? Or is there a kind of a go-to G. Hill story that you have that to kind of encapsulate what he was at that point in his career when he was kind of a world beater out there?
You know what? I said it. Grant Hill was the best small forward in the game, bar none. And Scottie Pippen is playing at that time, and whoever else you want to throw out there, he was the best power small forward in the game, probably the best player during a stretch. You know, even with Michael Jordan out there, Grant Hill was one of the best players, top three players easily in the NBA during his heyday before he got the severe injury to his ankle. And playing on different teams and playing against him, you always ask the question, is that guy really that good? Is he getting the benefit of the whistle from the officials? But when you get on the team with him and you see him in practice and you see this guy getting it done, you realize just how good he really is and how fast and how athletic and how skilled this guy really is. And that's what I came to realize becoming a team member, a teammate of his. This guy was really, really, really good, exceptionally good, and take nothing from him. He wasn't given anything. He earned it all. And this guy was a phenomenal player.
Yeah, absolutely. That stutter step crossover can kind of get to the hole on anybody, no matter how good of a defender they were. And it was some great times for the Hall of Famer starting his NBA career here in Detroit.
Funny story is that we were on the floor, and Brett and I were on the floor at the same time, and I remember Doug Collins, the coach at the time, screaming out, "Give the ball to Grant! Give the ball to Grant!" And I turn around, I get my hands ready, and everybody's looking at me. He's not talking to you. You know, we used to kid ourselves about that a lot. They run this play for Grant. And I get set up to run the play, and he was like, "You know, I'm not talking about you."
That's great.
We had a lot of fun with that. Even in the game, we would do stuff like that. And Grant was a part of it. He would say, "Hey, go down there. This play is for you." I'm like, "Man, that play is not for me."
That's great. Well, you played your role and played it well for 15 years in the NBA, so no shame in that. But I don't know that the Hall of Fame will come calling. No offense there. But I'm going to throw a date at you here, Grant, and see if you know the significance of it and what it means to you. January 4th. 1997, Pistons-Raptors at the Palace. Pistons get the big win. You mentioned playing with your cousin, Terry Mills, alongside the Pistons. Is there anything about that game that stands out to you that might be notable?
1997?
I know I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, but a player on the other team
If I were to take a shot at it, I would say my uncle was playing for Toronto at the time, and he was the oldest player in the NBA.
Exactly right. Exactly right. John Long, your uncle, who Pistons fans remember from kind of the pre-championship Bad Boys days, UAD star as well, Romulus player from a little before your time with Romulus High School, and your uncle, like you said. He disappears out of the league for 3, 4, 5 years, comes back when Isaiah's running the Raptors. It's just one of those anomalies in NBA and Detroit sports history that might get forgotten. And I can remember this happening, that your uncle comes back at 40 years old, not like an NBA superstar, that it makes sense that a guy like, LeBron might play at least 40 or 42 or something, but to have a gunner, a scorer, but an undersized guy come back at 40 like that. What's the story with him kind of bouncing back, coming back at 40 and playing on the same floor against his two nephews in an NBA game when they're in the middle of their prime? What was that like? And what was it like watching your uncle go through that at 40 years old?
Well, it was outstanding. And he paved the way for me to have an appreciation for taking care of yourself. I wanted to play until I was 40. That just didn't happen for me. But he gave me the insight. He gave me the wherewithal and the thought process to say, you can play this game as long as you keep yourself in shape, as long as you stay tough. He gave me the wherewithal to have that vision, because he did it. And I can tell you another story behind that. He was actually retired, I believe, and his former teammate, Isaiah Thomas, if you remember, was part of the Toronto Raptors. And he felt so good and felt strongly about my Uncle John and his work habits and how professional he went about his business as an NBA player. He wanted that to be in the locker room of the Toronto Raptors, and he called him up and said, "Hey, would you come in and do what you do? Be the leader, be a professional, be a pro like you've always been, and show this young group that I'm dealing with, what it takes to be a professional day in and day out." And my Uncle John was up to that challenge, and Isaiah brought him in to do just that. And he worked with a lot of young players, Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter, all of those guys. He worked with them and helped them along the way.
And I pulled up that particular game. Like you said, you and Terry playing for the Pistons, John Long playing for the Raptors, played 31 minutes off the bench for the Raptors on that particular night, scoring 12 points, knocking down a couple threes at the Palace of Auburn Hills. The Pistons win by like a million. It was 118-74 against a young Raptors team, obviously, but just really, really impressive for a guy, a guard, to come out like that. And I know you played till you're 36, 37 years old, but for him to, as a kind of a little gunner, to play till 40, really impressive there. But
tell me that date again, because I've got to go back. I'm going to get this. I got to get the tape of that game, because I don't have it. I want to make sure that I have it in my archives.
Yeah, January 4th, 1997 would have been the last time that he played against you guys. And I believe, and maybe you'd probably might know better than I think that a few weeks prior to that, he had played for the Raptors against you as well. I'm looking at December 16th, 1996, another Pistons-Raptors matchup there, and I'm pulling up the box score as we speak and seeing that you started that game. Terry came off the bench, and John Long played 15 minutes himself. So twice, okay. That means all three of you guys would have been on the court at the same time. This would have been December 16th, 1996. So find that one as well.
So but 96 Grant, and 97.
Yeah, 90s. Well, yeah, the same season, but just after, yeah, before the new year and after the new year. But right, Grant, right. Obviously the fans know now that you're on the Fox Sports Detroit pregame and postgame with Mickey and Tim and all those guys. But how did it work out for you to go into broadcasting like that? I know you've been involved with a handful of things in your post playing days. How did it come to be? And as kind of a former player, did they kind of set you up with some training and programs, or how did that whole process all come about?
Absolutely not. No training, no nothing. I was living in Atlanta at the time. I had an opportunity to go to Philadelphia. Larry Brown is the coach. I had a chance to go to Philadelphia, and Larry Brown said I had to make the team. And I said, wow, Larry, after 15 years, if you don't know if I can make the team or not, I don't know if I want to go and put myself through that and try to make somebody's team. So he said that's the only thing that he could offer. That was my last offer. And I said, well, maybe I shouldn't. Then I got an offer because I was in Atlanta. Steve Smith at the time was signed, sealed, and delivered to do the Atlanta Hawk games. He was supposed to be the color analyst for the Atlanta Hawks. He was done playing basketball. And late October, actually late September, you know, the season starts in October. Late September, Smitty gets a call from Bernie Bickerstaff. I believe Bernie's in Charlotte at the time. And he wants Smitty to come back and play one more year. Smitty says, I'm gone. He leaves the broadcast booth, leaves TNT in the lurch. So they call me and says, hey, Smitty's leaving. I know you're here in Atlanta. Would you come in? Would you consider doing the Hawks broadcast? I had no idea what I was doing. I said, hey, I've never done it before, but I would be willing to give it a try. I came in. I went through, we watched a game, we did a game on tape or whatever, and the guy said, hey, man, you did a great job. It's your job if you want it. I said, I'll take it. But he said, I'm letting you have it with the notice that Steve has told us that he's only going to play one more year. So when he retires, he's coming back, and we're going to give him this job. So I knew I was taking a job for just 1 year, and that's exactly what happened. I did it. Smitty retired. He came back and he started to do the Hawks games. Now, having said that, that bug was already in me at that point. I loved doing it. So they gave me an opportunity to be an in-studio analyst, similar to what I am now with the Detroit Pistons. So I did that for a while and got another opportunity with when Oklahoma City Thunder. They were looking for a broadcast analyst, and they called around and they ended up calling some people from the Detroit Pistons, and they referenced my name. They gave me a call, and they brought me in, and I actually had an opportunity to do coaching with the Oklahoma City Thunder very early on, their G League team, or the TV broadcast job. Wasn't really ready to coach yet, so I took the broadcasting job with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and that's where my broadcast career started, pretty much.
And we've enjoyed your work the time here with Fox Sports Detroit and look forward to following it for the rest of the season and beyond. So, Grant Long, and I feel like we're just scratching the surface here. I got a lot more questions for you down the road, so let's do this again sometime, Chris.
That would be awesome.
Well, thanks again to Grant Long for joining us here on the show today, and thanks again to Joe Brown for the update earlier as well, and thanks to all the guest hosts for helping us out this week. I will be back live tomorrow for Thursday's show. Looking forward to being back in Michigan and helping us through the rest of this playoff push for the Detroit Pistons as it's starting to round into focus. Now, I know I'm taping this on Friday, so however that focus might be is a little bit up in the air, but I appreciate you guys sticking with it and sticking with the show as I'm on vacation for a little bit this week. But back tomorrow, and thanks to you guys for staying with us. But this is your host, Matt Shook, saying have a good one, everyone, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow, recapping the game against the Miami Heat.